never worried that you might be the cool kid. You wear the latest fashions on top of all the trends. Or have you ever worried you were too much in the mainstream? Always so generic, more normal than your friends.
Well, we've devised a test to put to rest your fears. There's no need to panic if you let us your ears. Tonight you can't sleep easy after all that you've heard. Cause if you like the show, then you're probably a nerd. Oh, Ken, it's all.
Yes, that's right. It's another episode of the It's Canon podcast. We are here. Well, I'm here with only one co-host. Well, it's a different episode, so to speak. So, life commitments have taken over yet again, or as we like to call them, you know, the Murphy's Law, trolls, bad luck, goblins, what have you. So basically the past couple weekends have been super busy for the three of us, but we wanted to get an episode out. So what I've done is I've actually recorded bits and pieces with Kyle, bits and pieces with Tyler, and eventually I'll bring it all together. So I am your host, I am Boris, and right now I am joined with Kyle.
Hey!
And yeah, you're back! How does it
feels
feel?
Feels good. Feels right.
Good. I'm super happy that you're back.
Feeling good.
Good. And somewhere in the interwebs is Tyler, and we're going to be hearing from him in a little. We're going to hear from him regarding some cool news. We're also going to hear his thoughts on Guardians of the Galaxy and whatnot. So, yeah, Kyle, so tell us. It's been a while. It's been about a year, I think, maybe a little over. Yeah, you've taken a little bit of time off. You wanted to find yourself, be one with the world. Tell us what you've been up to.
I've been climbing mountains, visiting Buddhist temples, just trying to get to the center of myself in, you know, the depths of the jungles of Asia. And I'm doing well. I'm just keeping busy. I've been primarily doing a lot of video editing, mm-hmm. a lot of video editing assisting, which is keeping me busy, and it's very exciting. It's a whole new world for me that I'm absolutely enjoying like crazy. So it's a complete change than from where I was a year ago, and I have no regrets, which is always a fantastic thing to be able to say.
That's really good. Well, you're young enough to make those life-altering changes. Really, everyone is, and it's really good that you pursued what you wanted to do, and here you are happy. And because I'm selfish, I'm really happy that you're back.
Well, I'm going to say, that being said, I did miss doing the podcast quite a bit, and I'm happy that you and Tyler, I was afraid that when I said, hey, you know, suddenly out of nowhere, do you mind if I just jump back in again, that you guys were very accommodating and didn't think twice, which I'm very excited about and very happy about, and I'm glad to be back on talking and doing the usual stuff to, you know, just having fun and just talking comic news and comic geekery and whatever. But that being said, it's going to take a bit for me to get back into the swing of things.
Exactly. And I think that what hopefully will help you a little more is once we're back in the quote-unquote studio, back to the usual routine, I think things will be a lot easier. But like I said, I wanted to get an episode out to our listeners because, well, you know, it's one of those things where season three, I really wanted to be somewhat consistent. So what we're trying to do is at least once every 2 weeks have an episode. And like I said, we're trying to focus on a little something every week. So last time we talked all things Twin Peaks. And then today we are going to be talking all things Guardians of the Galaxy, really focusing on the movie more than anything else. I think everyone's been talking about the movie. Everyone has seen the movie, so might as well chat about it and whatnot.
I'm ready. Let's do this.
All right. So, you know, we're going to start off with some of the news get your opinion on sort of what's going on. So I think because it's been a while, I will put you on the spot and just flat out ask you, what have you been reading recently, if anything, comic book wise?
Comic book wise? I've been going back to a lot of the old classics that I haven't read yet.
Yeah.
So like those old, you know, books that everyone's like, you know, that are considered classics, everyone's like, wait, you haven't read that yet?
Yeah.
So, I recently read All of Sandman.
Nice.
Which was amazing. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad that I finally got to it. It was one of those things where I knew I'd like it, and it was just even better than I anticipated, and there was no overblown hype about it at all. Like, I really did like it a lot. I'm just recently getting into Preacher, because of the TV show, which I haven't really seen, but I'm getting into the comic book as well.
Yeah.
Not too far in. I've just been kind of, anytime I did sit down and read something, it was just very, you know, I read Civil War.
The original. Yeah.
I haven't got to two yet. I want to, but it seems very overwhelming. There's a lot of issues.
Yes. Especially if you try to get all of the side books and whatnot.
When I read Civil War, I read all the side issues as well with the original. So yeah. I read every little side issue that was a part of that event. And I want to do that with Civil War 2 as well, but it hasn't happened yet.
Yes, Civil War 2 is just that much bigger. It really covered more books, more time, and it's absolutely huge. I tried to do the same, and I couldn't. It was a huge undertaking.
And I'm also trying to get a hold on, like, I haven't really been keeping up with DC Rebirth, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So I've been trying to slowly catch up with that.
Right.
But right. I haven't really got too much into it. I, to be completely honest, I didn't read a ton of new comics. And when I did have time to sit down and read it, I just read older ones that I haven't read yet.
Cool. Very cool.
But I'm hoping to get back into newer comics as we go along and, you know, talk about it, obviously.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Again, it's like I missed reading them, and like it was almost kind of like a complete break from it all as soon as I left the show, I kind of stepped back a little bit, but I want to get back into it. I'm hoping that this show, along with you guys and our audience, we can talk about it and just have fun with it, and yeah, exactly.
Exactly, and I know, you know, right now Tyler's all worried because he really wants to do more of a get away from comics, and not as much as possible or anything, but, you know, we want to incorporate a lot more than just comic books onto the show, but you know what, Tyler, tough shit.
Well, I can see where he's coming from, though, because I think it'd be a nice little thing where, like, let's say if, you know, when the Defenders comes out, say.
Yeah.
It'd be cool to have, like, a big reason, like a huge conversation about the entire series. Like, we watch it all and then we sit down and have one episode dedicated to like the whole season or something like that.
And then that's sort of that's what we're planning to do. Like, you know, I'll get into the full details on what we have planned, but just so that our listeners know, you know, this week we're going to be talking about all things Guardians of the Galaxy. Our next episode, we are going to be talking all things crowdfunding. So, you know, we'll be talking about Patreon and Kickstarter and things like that, the ups and downs, the struggles and whatnot. So we're really moving away from just comic books. We're really trying to touch all things pop culture. And then the episode after that is one that I'm really actually super excited for, where we are going to be talking conspiracy theories.
Like in general or just within the world of geek? Like,
oh no, we're in general.
Oh man.
Exactly.
Okay.
I love how that's news to you. Yeah. So I've actually secured some really cool guests, from another podcast those conspiracy guys. So yeah, I'm really excited to sit down with them, chat all things conspiracies. You know, I'm trying to find some more geek related conspiracies, see if we can find them. So yeah, it's going to be a really fun show to just, you know, We're aluminum tinfoil hats on.
Oof. Okay. I'm holding on to my butt.
Good stuff.
I'm there, man.
Good stuff. All right. So I think we can get started with some news. So I'm just scrolling here, and the first thing that really popped to my eyes is the X-Men spinoff. New Mutants is actually going to be a horror movie. So director Josh Boone revealed the film will go in an unusual horror direction and be unlike anything the X-Men movie franchise so far has done. I quote, "We are making a full-fledged horror movie set within the X-Men universe," Boone said. "There are no costumes. There are no supervillains. We're trying to do something very, very different." This sounds absolutely different. So yeah, so it appears a lot of the inspiration for the film will come from artist Bill Sienkiewicz. Work on the New Mutants comics that started from issue number 18, which Boone described as, and I quote again, "surreal and impressionistic X-Men series that feels like Stephen King meets John Hughes."
Man, that sounds great.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this, actually. Might as well, you know, if it's going to be rated R, you might as well take it. And you can expand on the universe, and I think that's one thing that Fox has finally really understood with the X-Men franchise now. It's something that they didn't understand earlier. They can really make it as big, as small as they actually want it. It doesn't just need to be superheroes. And I think that's one thing that Marvel has really, really proven and done well and, you know, showed us that the superhero movies can be taken place and set as something else. I think Dark Knight also proved that when, you know, it was more of a police serial than anything else.
For sure. Absolutely. And I want to seek into this now. I want to get your opinion on this. What are you thinking about all of these R-rated R-rated superhero movies that are now kind of coming out and sort of paving the way for what sounds to this New Mutants is going to be?
I think that it's super important. I think it's
Deadpool.
Yeah, I think I'm really digging this. I'm liking this because, you know, you can only do so much when it's rated PG. And I'm not taking anything away from PG movies. I just think that, you know, we need something new. We need something different. You can only do so much within the scope of a PG-13 movie.
Right.
And I think that some of these series that deal with more mature topics, like the X-Men, you can really dig deep into what the X-Men can be. You know, you can really get into the political things. You can really get into the horror side of it, like the New Mutants will.
You know, absolutely. Absolutely.
I think that we're just opening up the doors and expanding that scope of what we can do with these heroes. And it really gives the audience a fresh look into these characters. For example, look at Logan. You know, Logan would not have been the same if it were rated PG. You know, a lot of things would have changed. There wouldn't have been as much violence, even the swearing. Not to say that it needed the swearing and it needed the violence, but it just added that gritty feel that
it would have been,
Logan,
it would have
been, you know, is.
Yeah, it just would have been a completely different story.
Yep.
And it's more in line with the character itself.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it just feels natural in a way. Same with Deadpool. Like it's just because it fits the character, and I'm sure they'll make sure that, you know, this somehow fits the New Mutants characters as well. You know, obviously I'm not too familiar with the New Mutants characters in any way, but the fact that they're gonna take advantage of what sounds to be like what sounds is good. Oh, man, I'm having so much trouble with words, man. I'm so rusty. What might be an R-rated movie by the sounds of it, hopefully they take advantage of it.
Yeah, and again, it doesn't need to be full out porn or full out horror or full out whatever. It can just be more gritty and more down to earth, realistic. As bad as that sounds, you know, speaking from, you know, when reality is how violent we are and whatnot.
Sure, sure, so. But like you said, it's just a different flavor of superhero movie. We're always going to have your standard Marvel movie that we all know and love, you know, like the look, the Marvel feel that we all have come to love over the past, you know, decade or so.
Yeah, your Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, your happy go lucky, you know,
when it deals with heavier topics, it still has a sense of kind of fun to it a little bit.
Yeah, heavier topics. We're going to touch on that because the conversation that I had with Tyler about heavier topics and Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is interesting.
I'm excited.
Exactly. So, sticking with mutants and the X-Men world, X-23 is more likely to be its own film. So Hutch Parker says, don't expect Fox slipping her into the background of another movie. She'll probably have her own movie. So this was said during a recent Logan Noir Q&A. Director James Mangold and producer Hutch Parker basically said, anything's possible. They've talked to the studio about it, and they've even talked to them about what they can do with this character. So that'll be kind of cool. You know, X-23 in Logan was one of the standout things in that movie, apart from just everything else.
Definitely.
But, yeah, it was really cool. So that's cool. It looks like they're going to expand that X-Men universe. I know having conversation with some friends, they were like, you know, they might as well just end the X-Men now, yada, yada, yada. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
No, I think this it's Sony who's behind Deadpool and X-Men, right?
Fox.
Fox, sorry. I think Fox is on a good path here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't end the X-Men. Just choose different characters, but keep the same tone that you guys like that they have.
Yeah, and that's like, the beauty about
it's almost what the DC movies want to be in terms of dark and grittiness.
Yeah, and I think exactly. But look how it took Fox almost 20 years to get there.
It also helps that they're kind of capitalizing on, as we said earlier, a flavor of superhero movie that hasn't been tapped into yet.
Exactly.
So it took 20 years to get there, but they're also capitalizing on what people obviously want to see, which is a darker superhero movie.
Yeah, exactly. Darker slash more realistic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Justice League Dark movie loses its director, Doug Liman. So the revolving door keeps on revolving. Dark Universe, Warner Brothers' upcoming Justice League Dark film adaptation has reportedly lost its director. According to Variety, Doug Liman has left the project over scheduling issues. We all know what that usually means. The studio has reportedly begun its search for a replacement. This is what was originally supposed to be Guillermo del Toro's movie. Then Scott Rudin joined the project as producer in 2015. Michael Gillio is writing the script. not a lot. We don't know much about this, but we do know it's going to revolve around John Constantine, Swamp Thing, Dead Man, Zatanna, and Etrigan the Demon.
Man, that sounds fantastic.
Yeah, I know this is like right up your alley.
Oh, hello.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd be so disappointed if it just got shelved because they couldn't find a director.
That's what I'm concerned about right now. It just seems like it's in absolute production hell. No, they can't keep anyone, whether it's legit scheduling conflicts or other Warner Brothers reasons. You know, you never know nowadays. I really hope that they can get this going.
I mean, if anyone can get anybody out of hell, it's the Justice League Dark.
Right? You're right. speaking of Dark Universe, Universal's Dark Universe is starting up this week with Tom Cruise's The Mummy. What do you think about that?
I don't know. I'll probably go see it. Let's be honest here. But overall, it's not necessarily striking any chords with me. I've seen the trailers and they look great, but I need to go out and see this movie. I'm not feeling any sort of urge to be out there on the opening weekend or anything like that.
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel. I don't know. It's one of those things where I'll eventually watch it, whether it be in the theaters or Netflix or, you know, streaming through whatever service or whatever. I'll eventually watch it, but I'm just not. I don't know. I'm not really a horror monster kind of guy. So, you know, I think Bride of Frankenstein is the next film that will be released in this universe that comes out. want to say 2019, from my memory reading an article last week.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Honestly, I think the idea of a Universal Monsters universe is silly.
Really? How come?
I don't know. It just, like, it works for superheroes because that's kind of a, like, a trope within the superhero genre that everyone knows in terms of, like, shared universe and multiverse or whatever, you know? But the Universal Monsters, they're just, it's so blatantly them trying to capitalize on superhero, like, the formula.
Right, but so do you feel the same about Warner Brothers Monsterverse?
What's that?
It's the Godzilla King Kong universe that they've created with the past couple movies.
Yeah, I didn't realize those were part of a universe either. Yeah. I saw them both. I liked them both, but I like them it just doesn't seem. I don't know. It just doesn't feel as natural as the superhero movies when they do that. If superhero movies didn't do that, you would think, you know, why haven't they? What's up here?
Yeah.
Whereas with these series, it just doesn't feel. It feels forced. So for me, it just doesn't. I have no urge to see Frankenstein interact with the mummy.
Right.
Like, because they don't have personalities.
Right. So, you know? The Monsterverse, which is Warner Brothers, produced by Legendary Entertainment in partnership with Toho, you know, the Godzilla films. So just going through the films here that I have in front of me. So Godzilla released in 2014. Then you have Kong Skull Island, which was released this year in 2017.
Good movie.
I actually have not seen Kong yet.
It's worth it.
Nice. Godzilla King of the Monsters comes out in 2019. And that's setting up Godzilla versus Kong in 2020.
Yeah, I mean, they have my money. That's the thing. Like, I'll be there because I love monster movies and I love those. Like, I love them on their own, but I don't have a desire to see Godzilla fight King Kong. I'm not like, man, I gotta see that.
Yeah.
Again, with superheroes, they have personalities. It's like, oh, it'd be funny to see Iron Man interact with, you know, John Constantine. What would that be like?
Yeah.
Those two wouldn't get along.
Yeah. Do you just feel like they're trying to force anything that kind of fits together into the shoe? Like,
yeah.
Cinderella's stepsister's feet, just trying to force it in there because it worked for someone, it's gonna work for everyone.
Yeah, exactly. They're just like, yeah, this glass slipper is going to fit no matter what, even if it means me walking on shards of glass.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Let's take a look at other stuff going on. So the Deadpool 2 villain has been cast. It's rumored to be Black Tom. Black Tom Cassidy, an Irish villain whose powers include the ability to control and bond with plant life, and issues concussive blasts with a wooden object.
It sounds like a good Deadpool villain.
Yeah.
It sounds like he'd be able to kind of joke around with them quite a bit.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like, I can only imagine the type of jokes that are going to be coming out of that. X-Men. Wow, we're talking a lot of X-Men and Fox. Well, they seem to have a lot lined up right now. And with Logan's Blu-ray DVD release, there just seems to be a lot of news coming out. So producer Hutch Parker is feeling pretty good about things right now. So, you know, like I mentioned, Logan came out hitting Blu-ray. And then they had they started talking about the next X-Men movie. So going back to that plan, so the next core X-Men film is going to be X-Men Dark Phoenix, which will pick up where X-Men Apocalypse left off and take a new twist to the Phoenix storyline, which already was adapted to the film, but I think they're going to try to change things up and sort of modernize it and make it hip.
Right.
So we'll see what's going on there. I don't know. I don't have any opinions right now. Been there, done that. That's my initial thought, but we'll see what happens. You know, X-Men Apocalypse wasn't the best of movies.
Right.
So we'll see what happens. DC Superhero Girls begins production. It's coming to the Cartoon Network in 2018. DC Superhero Girls animated series is coming to Cartoon Network. based on the popular DC Superhero Girls direct-to-video movies and digital webisodes. The series will follow DC heroes such as Diana slash Wonder Woman, Barbara slash Batgirl, and Kara slash Supergirl as they try to deal with being teenagers and navigating school while also fighting crime in Metropolis.
Ooh.
Yeah, other characters that will be featured on the show are Harley Quinn, of course, Zatanna, Bumblebee, Katana, Green Lantern, Jessica Cruz, among others.
I mean, it sounds interesting enough.
Yep. It looks like it's going to be the same sort of style, feel, like sort of atmosphere as Teen Titans and Teen Titans Go. So we'll see. So we'll see what happens.
Oh, okay. I see.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm necessarily a fan of that style.
So. Yeah, no, it's not for us, but that's fine. Yeah. It doesn't need to be for us, as long as they make something that, you know, girls can
look up to, in a way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's all that matters.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, Wonder Woman is coming out this Friday. Are you looking forward to it? What are your thoughts, initial thoughts on sort of like the hype, everything?
Wonder Woman.
If I had my soundboard, you know I'd be playing
man,
that.
Oh, man, do I miss it. I'm looking forward to it. I've been hurt twice by Batman v Superman and Suicide Squad,
mm-hmm.
which I both kind of enjoyed in an almost guilty pleasure kind of way.
I did in its own guilty pleasure kind of way.
Yeah, you know, like Suicide Squad, I knew it was kind of a bad movie, but I still had a good time in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm remaining optimistic that this will be the one to really kind of sell people on these DC movies.
Yeah, look, early indication seems to be more on the positive. That's really all you can ask for at this time. So we'll see. Honestly, we will see. Like I said, everything seems to be looking on the up and up. So,
I really hope so, because I really think this could be a fantastic movie, and it already looks great. So I'll be there. I'll be seeing it. I have no issues with it. I have nothing but optimistic hopes for it, and I hope that it really kind of sells everyone on. That it wins over any cynics of the DC movies so far. Because I think the DC movies can be a good franchise if they really do it right.
I agree. I agree 1,000%.
Yeah.
So just looking at Wonder Woman right now here on Rotten Tomatoes, and as of right now, Monday, May 29th, before the release, there is no score just yet.
Okay. Okay, we'll keep an eye on it.
Exactly.
We'll refresh it throughout the episode to see if anyone happens to write a review of it while we're recording.
Well, I know that the embargo is up, so people can talk about it, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll take a look at this. Yeah. Have you watched Alien Covenant?
No, not yet. I want to.
Yeah, same here.
I've been hearing mediocre things,
mm-hmm.
which disappoints me.
Yes.
Makes me sad because I am forever the apologist and optimist for anything alien.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to come out and say it. I enjoyed Prometheus.
Yeah. I liked it as well.
I thought Prometheus was really good, even though everyone I talk to seems to absolutely hate that movie, which is why I am not feeling down about Alien Covenant, because I enjoyed the last one, so I'm like, I have no reason to think this one will be bad,
mm-hmm.
other than the fact that reviews aren't all that great.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm gonna be there. Like, I want to see it. Possibly tomorrow of this, you know, as we're recording this, possibly tomorrow I'll be going up to see it. So hopefully it's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I hope so. I'll mention it on the next episode if I happen to see it and let you guys know what I think.
Yep. So this is actually a pretty neat thing. So Haley Atwell sort of started talking a little bit more about what would have happened in Agent Carter season 3. Still a little sad that show was canceled, but you know, it is what it is, really. So Atwell attended Heroes and Villains Fan Fest in London over the weekend, where she answered fan questions about Agent Carter. It was there the star said the show's third season would have lifted the lid on Peggy's English upbringing and the impact which her late brother still had over her sister. Aside from family ties, Atwell also said that season three would have delved into Peggy's relationship with the Jarvis family more so. So I think one of the bigger questions that a lot of people had was, you know, obviously Peggy Carter went off, had her own life, married, had children, and I think they were going to start exploring who said person was, which is kind of sad that this didn't get the full chance.
It's always kind of a bummer when you don't get to see the season that kind of delves into the past of the character, because anything that you may have found false with may have been explained, or that you could have enjoyed it even more as it got sort of deeper into the characters and you'd get an appreciation for the characters. Unfortunately, it didn't get to delve into that territory.
Yeah.
Would have been nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Injustice 2 came out last week or 2 weeks ago. Last week. 2 weeks ago, I don't even know anymore.
Me, 2 weeks ago.
To me, I don't even know anymore. Yeah, so that game is doing really well, as everyone knew it would.
Right.
Something that really piqued my interest is the first U.S. Castlevania from Netflix trailer came out. Have you seen this?
Oh, yeah.
This looks absolutely amazing.
It sure does.
It is.
Maestros lead with confidence.
It is. I gotta edit that. It is. Yeah, it looks damn good. It's anime style, which I'm really looking forward to.
Right.
But it just looks great. It just looks gritty. It looks really cool. Like, I have nothing else to really say apart from that.
Yeah, I can't wait. I love those games.
Mm-hmm.
They're creepy. They're cool. They're just. Everything about them is just pure gothic horror, if you like that kind of stuff. And this is going to be, the moment I heard it was happening, before I even saw a trailer, I was already in. So that's all. That's as much as I got to say about it, I guess. I'm going to be there.
Exactly. A lot more Star Wars news is going to be coming out over the next few months. So we're going to really delve into that. I don't want to speculate too much into things, but yeah, so we do have, we'll keep an eye out on more Star Wars Last Jedi news. We'll talk about it in en masse and whatnot. So another thing that we're going to be talking about again en masse and whatnot, now that summer is starting, we can catch up on our comic TV viewing, all the shows like Gotham and whatnot. We'll talk about what shows we're still watching, what shows we've dropped, what we think is going to happen on the shows that we are still watching, etc. We'll delve into that a little more. But is there anything you want to talk about as it comes to TV?
No, not at the moment. I'm still, for long listeners who happen to be wondering, still doing the Buffy watch through. Still happening. three quarters of the way through season 6, I'd say. So we're just about there.
Mm-hmm.
that's about it. I don't really have. I watched quite a few X-Files episodes.
Mm-hmm.
That's a show I'd never gotten into.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm getting into that. So you can see that I'm living right now. I'm actually talking to you from the early to mid 90s. I'm glad that the connection's coming through okay. I'm hoping that I sound good on your end and to the listeners, because I'm at least 20 years behind all of you.
I love it. All right, so like I mentioned, we're trying out a few new things here on the It's Canon podcast. It is season 3, and like I said, we're determined to release episodes, and I'm hoping that we can, at the very least, MacGyver episodes together, kind of like this one, and I hope that our listeners enjoy sort of the content that they're getting, and I'm trying to get the views of both Tyler and Kyle, so right now I have Tyler, and, you know, we've been talking a little bit offline about some of the interesting news bits that have come up. So do you have anything you want to chat about?
Yeah. How about we start with Marvel's latest Amazon kerjiggery?
Ah, yes, the kerjiggery.
So until June 16th, anyone who buys a hardcover or paperback graphic novel on Amazon.com gets one of 60 Marvel collections on Kindle for free. And his sampling includes, you know, World War Hulk from 2013, Old Man Logan, 2003-2009, The Infinity Gauntlet, House of M, just a whole ton of other
stuff. It's the big stuff. It's the big stuff.
Yeah, and then more recent things into including Spider-Gwen number 1, Darth Vader volume 2. But yeah. There is a limit that it appears to be one per household.
Mm-hmm. How do you enforce that with, I guess the mailing address?
Yeah, it'll be one per Amazon account. Yep. And then the idea being that, you know, if you're... Amazon Prime has a lot more people who have bought in the States than up here in Canada, because the value added in Canada isn't as good. And that's... You know, no one's fault, not complaining, it's just an observation.
So, no, it's no one's fault, it's the nature of the beast when a lot of these services, they're made for the States, you know, they come up to Canada a lot of times, and I don't want to say as a second thought, but as a second thought. And really, you know, there's so many rules here, like, you know, let's just take a look at Amazon Prime's video service, like, you know, there's only so much that they can actually put up there. Netflix is a perfect example of this. So, you know, the pricing scheme is different here, so it's basically these companies have to have all new agreements with every company they work with in order to have the same equal thing in Canada as they do in the States.
Yep, and then the other side of it is the population of Canada is just over, 10% of the population of the United States?
If at all,
And a larger geographic area. So, logistically, every time I've talked anything policy or business-wise, the logistics of Canada are always a nightmare.
Yep, exactly.
I want to talk about what this might mean for Marvel on a bigger side of things.
All right. What are your thoughts?
It's actually really funny because earlier today I was listening to a really old Webcomics Weekly during that fiasco of when you could buy digital comics through Comixology, or this is back when there were other options. I think Diamond Head, Diamond Digital, or whatever. Back when there were other options. And it was about being able to go to a comic book store and buy your stuff digitally, and this is very weird.
Yeah, yep. This is, you know, things like this, Amazon scares me. They have been able to destroy the Barnes & Nobles of the world, you know? They've been able to, okay, not Barnes & Nobles, not so much, but the mom-and-pop bookshops, they're gone. They're very hard to find, and if you find one, you know one nearby, please support it. Anyways, back on point. My major concern right now is we are seeing a major shift in the comic industry in general. You know, it's impossible to get firm numbers on digital versus hard copy. I think comic book collectors in general want physical books. However, comic book stores right now, they're struggling. And I think with Amazon coming into the game and trying to do something like this, this is a play to really shift how people purchase comic books, whether it's digital or physical. I can see them, you know, testing the waters and sort of doing a doing something that'll change the way that the game is played. And it scares me because there's nothing I like more than going to my local comic book shop, you know, here in Toronto, whether it's Million Dollar Comics, which right now they're they don't have a location right now. You know, that's a perfect example of how everything is changing. We have Silver Snail and whatever the store is here in Toronto. Yeah, Gotham Comics. And you know, there's just something about going physically, picking up your books, talking to those folks, you know, whether it's an opinion that you share or an opinion that someone's giving and you just want to, you know, slap them. you know, it's part of the entire experience. So seeing this is kind of interesting and sad all at once, but exciting because, well, comic book sales, as we know, generally right now, as we spoke about, last time are down. So this can help the issue overall, but it can really change how we consume comic books in the grand scheme of things.
Well, I think it's fascinating. I think that you've hit the nail on the head. I think part of it is also Marvel testing out what's going to drive sales.
Yeah.
It's testing out, you know, can we convert some of these people to doing some digital? And this is my speculation, but I'm wondering how much of this is seeing about going, look, if you buy a graphic novel or a comic in the store, you're just going to get the digital. I think that's part of where this ends. And I don't know how that I feel. It's always compensation packages have been, for creators, have been in a weird place for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't think this helps them a lot. I don't think it helps them a lot, and I think that it helps Marvel continue to run their little enterprise the way they're going to.
Yeah.
I think the other side of this is you can't stop progress, and I don't think we should I don't think we should prop up those comic book stores and gaming stores and whatever that are, frankly, they're terrible, and those exist.
Yeah, for sure.
I can think of one in Toronto you didn't mention that I just, like, it's atrocious, and it's offensive. Like, they're just offensive to their customers, and it's like, I don't know why you'd go here.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we are going to go through a cull of a lot of those. I also think that, you know, there's two parts of it. The one part is there is the collector's market, which, hard to know exact numbers, but I think we're seeing a bit of a... It's shrinking a little bit for the overall makeup of sales of the market.
Mm-hmm.
And they're always going to be a major factor, but it's not going to be... We're never going to go back to the 90s. I think the other side of it is Amazon and Comixology already have the discoverability problem.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of people, if you want to try a new comic, and if you want, whether you're an old hand at comics or not, stores are the best place to find new things because they're going to curate it. And, you know, you have some front of house sponsor deals that you do for anywhere, but Amazon has those too, of what gets paid to show up earlier in your search or closer to the front of store. There's a transaction behind that.
Mm-hmm.
But comic book stores have always... The successful ones tend to make it because they build a community.
Yep.
And part of that is, you know, when something like Lumberjanes or... I guess early days of Saga, or what's the Kaiju one? Is that Kaiju Max? Or
yeah,
that one was notorious for getting support from comic book stores being like, this is not a thing you're expecting.
This is
real good.
I think you made a very great point that I was thinking about also during my spiel, and it's that discoverability where, you know, an algorithm can only discover so much as long as it's paid to discover you, whereas word of mouth is by far the most important way of marketing a comic book, and I think anyone in the creator-owned space can speak to that. They do not have the marketing dollars that the DC, that the Warner Brothers and the Disneys use. They rely on us, the fans, to get the word out. So it'll be very interesting to sort of see how, you know, where this goes with that. I think, you know, this is, you know, you have your Jim Zubs of the world, which they do everything in their power to promote their comic books using social media. And I think he's one of the prime examples of being very successful at that. And I think that we're going to be seeing more of that, but there's nothing better. You know, one thing is hearing it from the creator. Another thing is hearing it from fans. That's, I think, one thing that I really appreciated with you and Kyle. Like, you know, there were times that I started reading a book because we were talking, whether it be offline or during a podcast, and, you know, it's like, hey, you should check this out. And it's like, oh, sure, why not? So, you know, it's just going to be very interesting to sort of see where and how all of this develops. And, you know, I'm a little nervous because, like, we both mentioned, there's only, you know, at the end of the day, an algorithm can only find what it's told to find.
Oh, totally. I think I want to delve into I want to delve into Nick Spencer recently took to Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about why seasonal relaunches are the best thing ever.
Yes.
Basically, his argument was that if a book launches and after a year attrition is hovering at a low number, editorial slash publishing sales have two options, really, kill it or relaunch it. Most creators are going to take option B every time. And he goes on about this, and he does, he proposes an interesting argument behind the business logic. I mean, part of the reality is, for anything creative, you're gonna have attrition. Like, if you launch a new book or a new movie, the sequel almost invariably has fewer people see it or consume it, because usually you need the first one, so you only have a subset.
Mm-hmm.
And movies have done a really good job of, they're able to extend the lifespan of their number one incredibly long to get huge numbers. But of course comics are going to have attrition rates.
Yes,
and
for sure.
I think that there's a lack of imagination coming out of Nick Spencer and the Nick Spencers of the world right now of arguing like, yes, we have those attrition numbers, so we have to relaunch. And then he gives out numbers of like 70,000 for the first issue and then 25,000 for the for issue 5.
Yeah. But that's the most short-sighted thing I've ever seen and really read recently. And I've seen this argument of whether it be articles or podcasts where, you know, people say, you know, every comic book should be, you know, 12 issue volumes and, you know, renumber them based on years and, you know, you have the 12 months and yada, yada, yada. But that can only help you for so long. Like, you're not going to get the 75,000 issue number ones every single year. You're not going to get them every single relaunch.
Yep.
People, like, let's honestly delve into this a little bit more. And I think it's easier with Marvel because they've done more quote-unquote relaunches recently to see sort of, you know, with every number one that's been released, what are those numbers like? I don't have them in front of me, but I'm pretty sure that with every time that you've relaunched the number one, that goes down.
Yes, I actually have information to back you up, so I'm going to interject. Asher Elbin actually wrote in The Atlantic, which was what Spencer was probably responding to. It happened the same day, and the Elbin piece came out before. An excerpt from the piece, he points out that Ms. Marvel, the original series starring a young Muslim heroine from Jersey City, debuted at a circulation of roughly 50,000 before holding steady at 32,000. The relaunched version a year later began around 79,000 before dropping to a current circulation of 20,000.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel's constant relaunching has been harmful to direct market sales overall, as well as harmful to building new long-term readers. With every relaunch, it becomes easier to jump off of a title.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think that's you go for it.
Oh, thanks. I was just gonna say that there's two major takeaways from those statements. Number one is, you know, I think it does make your brand weaker. People aren't going to feel as invested, literally, in what you're selling. And it goes back to the point that we made a couple weeks ago about comic sales in general, where, you know, people are partially giving in to business pressures and making decisions based on, you know, it's not doing well, let's cancel it. So why am I as a consumer going to become invested in that, knowing that it'll be gone soon for whatever reason?
I'm going to echo you and double down, and I'm going to say I think it's chicken shit, and there's a reason that you have people who are not Marvel fans responding incredibly powerfully to the TV shows.
Yep.
Especially the Netflix ones.
Yep.
And they do not respond, and they can't, and Marvel has difficulty retaining readers for their comics, and it looks like you're chicken shit.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's bingo. You said it right there. I think that, you know, the one thing that I've always also heard with all these movies and shows is, how do we get those people reading the comic books? Well, you have to have a better business plan. How are you going to release these shows expecting to have people jumping onto the comic books when said comic book will be canceled within a few months, or you don't even promote it, or whatever, what have you. You know, it's just, I find that there's such a divide in Marvel, and I think you know where I'm going to go with this, where you have your movies on one end, you have your TV on one end, and then you have your comic books on the other end. And it's this triangle of how can you make these triangles connect. Like, it's just, it's not working right now. And I think that, you know, a couple years ago, or about a year ago, with the whole Perlmutter situation and Feige, you know, it's we're really seeing it right now, where you have these areas and everyone is kind of, through internal politics, fighting, and the bigger picture is actually, you know, it's hurting you, because people aren't going from your TV shows and your movies to the comic books. And, you know, over time, you're going to have to rely on comic books. And I think that I'm afraid to see Marvel go through something in the future where people are going to fall off watching the movies, fall off watching the shows. I'm not going to say completely, but what are they going to rely on at that point? You're going to alienate true comic book fans, so they're going to be gone, and the general public is going to be bored of watching the same movie and show. Then what?
Yep. Well, and I think that I find it fascinating how often, and I kind of feel bad for Nick Spencer, because his stuff got collected and it's really easy for me to pick apart now. But he talks about how we are incentivizing publishers to put out only the safest product from a sales perspective and ship it more frequently. Saga's the most successful comic. And if you were to pitch that, that does not sound like a safe business option. And he's basically arguing that they're conservative from a business standpoint, because these crazy comics don't do well. And then I'm like, Lumberjanes, Saga, Why the Last Man, like, all these amazing comics out there do just fine.
Yeah.
Wayward. A lot of those. Oh, Wayward's probably the worst example. Wayward, you can pitch safer.
Yeah, you can, and it has been. Yeah. Yeah, no, but you're exactly right. So I don't know. I just feel like, I think people are just trying to make almost excuses for what's going on.
Yeah.
In the industry, and it sucks. But someone needs to figure out their shit. And sadly, like, you know, it's the. This is why it sucks having Disney and WB own our comic book companies.
I don't know. I might, to a certain extent. I might push that back on that a little.
Mm-hmm.
It's just management has been very weird for comics for a very long time. And I think that definitely predates the Disney Warner Brothers acquisitions, because that's how Marvel especially got into this position.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
The comic book industry is just a weird industry in general. You have interesting characters, you know, around it. It's just, I don't know. It's one that, once you think you have it figured out, it does something weird. And I think right now, these companies are just trying to do too much and not give anything a chance. And everyone now is trying to make up excuses to why it's happening, but no one's trying to figure out how we can fix it.
I think that's a really good summary and a good point to jump on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about Wayne Hall wrote up his coverage of MegaCon Orlando. With a very inflammatory title of Comics Portal, Should Dealers Make Money at Today's Cons? Which is a very inflammatory title. And I went in, ready to start being like, I will fight you, Wayne. Yeah. And then he proceeds to go on and offer a very balanced set of coverage. But he... I'm gonna summarize him approximately for the start of the discussion. I'm not sure if you've read this one. But he argues that dealers often exist at cons. And he talks mostly about dealers who are buying and selling comics mostly as collectibles/investment pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about how a lot of them are overcharging, and argues that what's the other argument? And a lot of them are not good salespeople. And then he kind of goes, maybe we shouldn't have dealers at all. But if dealers exist, they should be able to cover their costs of going to a con.
Mm-hmm.
And then he kind of opens it up for conversation. And at the time of us recording, there is no conversation happening below the post. It is just from earlier today. So, well, let's start with you. Do you think there should be dealers at cons?
I think so. I think that that's a very important part of the convention experience. I think that not only do you have options to pick up what you want, but, you know, you see a variety of merchandise from various parts of not only your city, but other cities and other countries sometimes. I think having dealers at cons is pretty overall important, you know, to build the community. And yeah, that's kind of summarizes where I feel. I think it's super important to have them. And, you know, at the end of the day, if one dealer's trying to rip you off, you can just walk to the next one and see what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I think that saying dealers is needlessly vague.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I, for to put my cards on the table, I work at GenreCon up in Guelph, and I have worked with a few other conventions in the past, and I've never worked with vendors. I've never done mm-hmm. that side of it, but I've always been of the opinion that if you're running a convention, you have some obligation to curate the vendors coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And Gen Con faced this, and I'm talking vendors, big tent, not just con people, but Gen Con recently got in a lot of trouble for having a bunch of people that were selling misogynist and pro-Nazi stuff on their floor, and they got rid of them. And I'm like, yes, obviously they have responsibility to manage that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they're managing it, is them saying, we literally accept the first 100 applicants, hands off, you're going to get what you're going to get. But then that should be in, you know, neon letters. Or it should be, we're curating this for an experience. And most people I've talked to kind of get on board with the idea of it should be a curated experience. Talking dealers specifically of comics, for the most part I'm with you, especially at these smaller cons in towns that aren't as big and maybe are far off from your New York or your San Diego or your Toronto. That's how you get maybe some comics and collectibles that you can't get otherwise in town.
That's exactly it. I think people always forget that, you know, we, even you, as you know, you're in Guelph, you're about an hour away from Toronto. You know, even you still have a lot of options for comic book stores. You have a great store, a local store near you.
Yeah.
Other people don't have that. Other people have to venture out for hours to pick up their comic books. So, you know, for them to be a collector living in the middle of nowhere is a lot more difficult. So having these cons, going to a con and having all these options, you can find that book that you wanted for a reasonable price.
Yep. I'm with it. I think the other part of it is, like you said, it builds that community. That being said, if you have some salesperson who's harassing people on the floor, that is, if the people run the con, even if it's a volunteer con, you're running an event, you're taking responsibility for what happens.
I was about to say that as well. I think you and I had a conversation. Actually, no, it wasn't with you. It was with someone else. Every time I have these conversations, I just automatically assume it's with you. And this conversation was about what YouTube is doing, which we can talk about in a little bit. Just I want to get your business thoughts on this, and in terms of how they're changing up how people can monetize on their video ads. And, you know, YouTube has now taken up the responsibility of creating a list of videos that, you know, you can't monetize on because, well, they can contain hate speech or something. They've done their due diligence and to do that work. And I find that also cons in general, this conversation I know I did have with you, and cons, you know, I know it's a lot of work. Don't get me wrong. I know it's a ton of work. But some cons, I don't know how they even proceed to go and happen, because there's some pretty poor planning and whatnot that goes on in them. You know, and sometimes it's just like even getting a response from these people for a simple inquiry takes forever. You know, you're waiting until the very last minute to know whether you've been accepted. And again, I'm not taking away from the fact that how hard it is and how much work people are putting in. But it just goes to show you that, you know, if sometimes if you're rushing, you might just sneak these bad vendors in. And ultimately, it's your responsibility of who's selling on your floor.
Oh, totally. I mean... I have shifted recently away from, like, there. You often hear the refrain at cons run by the community or cons or by volunteers that, well, hey, man, this is just a volunteer con. What do you expect? And I'm of the opinion that, like, I should still expect to feel safe.
Yep. A con is a con is a con. It's supposed to be a safe place.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be a place where, you know, it's a positive experience. You don't want to walk into a con and just feel like it's an absolute shit show.
100%. And I exhibit at cons sometimes. And I've been to cons where day of I've showed up after getting confirmation, written confirmation. We have a contract that, like, I get space and a table. And I've shown up and they've been like, we have nothing for you.
Yeah.
And I'm I'm out money, and we have a contract, so...
Yep, and I know that there was even a con in Toronto a couple years ago that, you know, there was borderline a scam. And I know a lot of local artists and local talent and local businesses who wanted nothing to do with this con, literally. And, yeah, it was just, you know... At the end of the day, it's the con's responsibility to create that safe space, not only for vendors, but for customers.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I think that the other thing they've got to remember is that everyone else who's involved is counting on this. So mm-hmm. I've become much more pro for-profit cons. Mm-hmm. They have problems, but they're problems that are easier to fix when you compare it to... these volunteer cons, where it's just everyone passes the buck.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. It's just like, all right, cool, man.
Yep. Yep. Sometimes the best cons are run by the people who have been in many of them.
Oh, totally. I mean, I think that the big cons like San Diego and Fan Expo even have their own set of problems. And it seems like the best ones are the ones that are, they're run for profit, but they're run by a store in town who gets their community, and this is part of their everyday business.
Mm-hmm.
Sad, did you have anything else you want to talk about for news?
I'm good if there's anything you want, because I know that there's Kyle and I have talked up. Now that Kyle's back, I'm going to start doing this again. Alright, so there's our little segment with Tyler talking about all things news. So, I think right now is a pretty good time to take a break. But before we take a break, you probably don't even remember how people can get a hold of us. So, I will remind the folks.
Let me try. Can I try? All right.
Yeah.
If anybody wants to get a hold of us, you can go to our Facebook page, Comics I Read, that's
C-O-M. No. You failed already.
I fail already?
Yeah, we changed everything to the It's Canon podcast.
Muscle memory, man. And yeah. I got so excited because I started spelling out comics, and I'm like, oh, man, I got this.
Yep. So, no, we've changed it all to the It's Canon podcast.
You lead the ship. I'll handle the masts.
All right, so if you want to get a hold of us, you can get a hold of us at all of our social media sites. So we have Facebook, we have Twitter, we have a YouTube page, we have an Instagram page, we have... pretty much anything social media, you can find us there. You can find us at the It's Canon podcast. Pretty simple. If you were already following us when we were Comics I Read, you are already following us now that we are at It's Canon podcast. If you are not following us, you should think about following us. That is if you don't hate us by now. But if you hate us by now, then why are you listening?
I apologize. I mean, you've only heard me for maybe a half hour, and you already hate me.
Exactly.
What'd I do?
I don't know. What didn't you do, really?
Who knows?
So we have that. You can also, you know, it'd be awesome if you can subscribe to the podcast. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us on Google Play Music. You can find us on Stitcher. You can find us on just about any platform possible. We will have a website up and running soon. I am just waiting for June to start so that we can put all of our fees into 1 month. That way I'm not paying things throughout the year. And I remember it's June. So, yeah, we'll have a website up and running where you can find us a lot easier. But, yeah, any social media, you can find us and you can subscribe to us wherever you listen to your podcasts. So with that said, I think it's time for us to take a little bit of a break. When we do come back, we're going to be talking all things Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and really we're going to focus on the movie, so I'm really excited to talk about that. And one thing I want you to start thinking about, Kyle, is
okay.
How deep and dark and tones and some of the sort of what this movie was actually talking about.
Okay.
I had a very interesting conversation with Tyler about this. So, when we get back, we will be talking all things Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm your host. I am Boris, and right now I am talking to Kyle.
Hey.
And somewhere in cyberspace is Tyler, talking away, doing something.
Yeah, he's in the Matrix.
Exactly. So we are going to be talking all things Guardians of the Galaxy. So let's jump right into it.
Let's do it.
Guardians of the Galaxy 2. What? Where your initial
Webster's Dictionary defines Guardians of the Galaxy 2 as
a pretty good movie, not as good as the original, but good enough, and it makes my top 5.
Yeah, you know what? I'd say the exact same thing. It's a pretty solid definition. I think that's anyone I've ever talked to about this movie ever has said pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I really liked the movie. I think that this movie was really focused on character growth, and I really, really enjoyed that.
Yeah, it seems I noticed. Look, you know, thinking back on it, that every character, I think, had a one-on-one scene with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like pretty much every character had a scene with the other character. Like each member of the core group got to talk to one another one-on-one.
At some point, yep. I want to say the same thing. It's been almost a month since I've watched it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I want to say the exact same thing. I think
which goes to say is great because you get a lot of character development in terms of like seeing them interact with different people and kind of the core group dynamics and everything like that. It's less of your like they got to spend a lot of time developing the characters and not introducing them to us.
Exactly.
We all knew who they were. We got right into it, and then we found out more about the characters instead of being dazzled by crazy action scenes. That being said, there was incredible choreographed action scenes in this movie.
Oh, it was really well done.
Yeah.
That opening scene was so freaking great.
The opening scene was amazing, and the scene with Yondu's whistle and Rock,
yeah.
It was just insane.
Yeah, that was so well done. That was really well done.
Oh, yeah.
Any other initial thoughts?
No, you pretty much summed it up, very, very succinctly where you know it's everything you love about the first one. If you haven't watched it yet and you're wondering if you really enjoyed the first one, or you know you and your family, you and your kids really like the first one, see the second one. You're still gonna love it. It's gonna be great. It just doesn't necessarily have the same impact as the first one. I think it's because at that time, there was really no superhero movie like it. Mm-hmm. So when it came out in 2014, the first one, it was just so different. It was funny. It was like the music was perfect. Like everything about it was just so cool. Like it was just so different.
Yep.
And so this time around, not in a bad way, but that vibe that the first one gave off doesn't feel as unique. Mm-hmm. Just because we know what to expect. I don't mean that in a bad way, but it's just what it is. But so it doesn't necessarily have the big impact, but you're still going to leave thinking that it's a great movie, and it is. So, you know, it's definitely one of the best movies I've seen this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it was really well done. One thing that it's actually very interesting that we're having this conversation just because I'm right now still thinking about that conversation with Tyler. So I think this is a really good time to listen to sort of his thoughts on Guardians of the Galaxy 2. All right, we've been talking all things Guardians for quite a little bit, and I guess this is a pretty good time to bring Tyler into the conversation. So, Tyler, Guardians of the Galaxy, all things Guardians, mainly focusing on the movie since that's really what a lot of people are talking about. So you went to go watch it opening day, well, before opening day, really. The yep. Pre-screenings that they do on Thursday nights. What are your thoughts? What do you want to talk about? Floor is yours.
Floor is mine. Well, I want to start out with, I thought it was a good movie. I really enjoyed it. However, I didn't think it was... I've seen a lot of reviews out there that are kind of like, this is the greatest movie that's ever been made. Mm-hmm. Or even that it's better than the first one. And I even disagree with that assessment.
I do too.
There's definitely some more character development. But there seems to... I guess I want to start with my big thing, which is... Guardians of the Galaxy is... Volume 2 especially is... It's 100% about the cycle of abuse. And I've seen people deny this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I don't know how you do that. Like,
mm-hmm.
Ego, the Living Planet, portrayed by... Oh, brain fart. Kurt Russell.
Mm-hmm.
He's an abusive father.
Yeah.
He's almost a textbook abusive father.
Yep.
Star-Lord is Peter Quill, played with Chris Pratt, is 100% the victim of abuse. He creates an entirely new persona. So he can pretend that, like, the abuse didn't happen. Rocket is abusive. We find it in Volume 2, in one of the best subplots, that Gamora and Nebula, we understand the cycle of abuse they've been caught in.
Mm-hmm.
Drax abuses everyone around him.
Mm-hmm.
Mantis is just the subject of everyone's abuse. And then we even have Groot show up with... And spoiler alert, but he shows up with a severed toe, and it is made 100% clear, oh, he cut that off somewhat. And mm-hmm. Stan is like, for laughs, and this is a very brutal movie. Even more so than the first one. Because there are just a lot of people who aren't even... It's a lot of violent things happen that are played off for laughs.
Yeah, I agree. I did pick that up when I was watching it. The psychological abuse that Ego gives to Peter is very interesting. It's a lot deeper than a lot of people are making it out to be in terms of, you know, this movie. And it's kind of funny that, like, I guess the whole, you know, point, moral, whatever, is you pick your family through friends, etc. Yeah. But I don't know. It's just the way that everything came together was just very interesting. If you really sit down and think about it, which we have, I agree. It's just very interesting. It's like, you know, people are pretty shit to each other.
Yeah, especially these people. I got to say, one of the things that I want to really delve into, and I want to get your thoughts on, is Yondu's, and then I'm going to do air quotes here, redemption.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely, they try to play it off that this is a redemption story for Peter's adopted father. And they kind of just plaster over the frankly atrocious things Yondu did.
Mm-hmm.
He regularly threatened Peter with being eaten.
Mm-hmm.
He never returned him to his family back on Earth, which he could have. And it would have been like a weird thing. Peter would have gone through. Yeah. Anyways. Yondu's a terribly abusive person, and he doesn't. I don't think he really gets. He's not redeemed. Him being willing to kill himself in the process, that's just, he's found a way out of being abusive.
Yeah.
He's never stopped being abusive. He just kills himself.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I don't know, sometimes I think I've looked way too much too deep into this, but at the surface of it, when you really start thinking about it, it's like, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. You know, he's been pretty much shit throughout. You know, he's not shit because he's a funny character. You know, we're going to forgive him for that. Again, I just think that trying to make light of actual issues in a movie like Guardians, because it's not really people of Earth, so, you know, it's not really abuse because they're not Earthlings type thing.
Yeah. When at the same time, the movie is going out of its way to be like, but Ego is an abusive father.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, I think, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Another thing is for just Yondu being a monster.
Mm-hmm.
An actual just monstrous person. We're going to get into spoiler territory here, people. But he tells Peter at one point that he doesn't use his head when he's controlling that little whistle lance of his. He uses his heart.
Yes.
Which means he really wants to kill everyone. That's his only desire, is to kill so many people.
Yeah. I like how you picked that up. I really do like how you picked that up. And again, are we reading into this too much? Like, I don't know. But
no, because he kills so many people.
I know, but I don't know. I don't know. It's like, again, I'm torn because you're bringing up fantastic points that I thought of. You cannot, like, this movie had a horrible, horrible core story in terms of, you know, how horrible people are. And, but it's just because it was done lightheartedly, non-Earth people, it's all okay. Like, I don't know. It just, I don't know. I was very torn watching this movie in that sense when I got out of the entertainment factor, mm-hmm. and really thinking about, you know, what this movie was trying to tell us. So I don't know. It's interesting that you're bringing all this up, because I had all these thoughts.
Well,
and I couldn't formulate a proper thought in terms of how to begin to explain this. Am I looking into this too much? You know, are we just conditioned to gloss over these issues? You know, because, you know, a lot of times we are. Like, there's so many issues in the world that we kind of allow to just happen because they've just been there forever and what, you know, whatever. Is this a case of that, or is this just like, I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, to argue against you, I don't think you can be like, bah, it's just for fun. Because you have that scene of a heart-to-heart between Yondu and Rocket, which is basically confirming, yes, this is about the cycle of abuse and trying to end it. And mm-hmm. how often, and not always, but how often people who suffer from abuse, like Rocket, like Yondu, in turn, even if they don't become abusers themselves, have a lot of baggage that goes along with it. And it's about them trying to deal with it.
Yeah, no, for sure. I agree there. Yeah, you're right, 100%. And again, that's one of the things that one of the reasons why I was torn with my overall assessment of this is just like, you know, did I just one of the things I had when I finished watching this was, did I just watch that? Because I picked up on a lot of these things right away, and I'm like, wow, there's a lot of really shitty characters here.
And not shitty as in they're poorly portrayed. Shitty as in they're bad people.
They're bad people, you know? Well, it's just, I don't know. And then, no, it just, it really tore me. And as you can tell, I still can't even put it into words.
Yeah, I think that my big thing, you know what, I want to point out, I don't think any of this makes it a worse movie. I actually think that it makes it a better movie. And I think that the big thing is that, for example, Peter Quill being like, this thing's fine. This thing's just fine. Is him just being like, well, it's a better flaw than I had, so it's okay. And I'd love for, as we keep going, because as we've seen with Nebula and Gamora, we're setting up that this is going to be, we're dealing with more abuse, and that's the structure of what these are going to be about.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to see more of that, and Peter being like, oh my god, every father figure I had was terrible.
Yeah.
I think it makes it better. And it may, like, Yondu's, I feel like Yondu's, again, in air quotes, redemption was a purposeful, the more I think about it, the more I'm like, no, this feels purposeful. Like, it was done to make you feel a little bit manipulated because Peter and the rest of them were a little bit manipulated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. You're right. Yeah, just like, again, great points. You bring up some really, really good stuff here.
So yeah, I mean, that's the part I really want to delve into. I've heard some very interesting discussions about Baby Groot reflecting the soul of the team, in that everyone is, especially in this edition, everyone is really hurting.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone is not in a good place. And as a result, Baby Groot is violent and angry all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really interesting bit.
I think so too. I think so too. Very interesting.
That being said, tons of this movie's great.
It's
probably top five Marvel movies for me.
I agree. It's probably one of the better ones that have come out. I look forward to these more than, you know, the Avengers nowadays, like these one-offs.
Well, I still hold out hope beyond hope, even though I know it's not going to happen now, that we're someday going to get, like, the extra hour of Age of Ultron that got left in the cutting room floor, and it'll all make sense.
Yeah, I agree. It won't happen. It never happens. So, yeah.
It happened to Lord of the Rings.
Sorry?
Happened to Lord of the Rings.
And
then it happened with Godfather. They just re-released all of Godfather recut for television. In like an HBO style hour long. It's really good.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. So any final thoughts on Guardians or?
I think it's worth seeing if you haven't already. I haven't spoiled everything for you. I think that despite being a very large cast, most of the juggling of different plot threads and subplots is superb.
Mm-hmm.
The only character that I feel like gets a little bit shafted by the narrative is Drax. And even then, it's just like he becomes a bit more of a comedic character.
Yeah.
And a lot of his development is implied rather than explicitly shown, but...
Yeah.
Also, that opening.
Yeah, that opening was fantastic.
That opening.
Again, the movie was great, and, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
So thanks for your thoughts, Tyler.
Woot. See you, everybody.
Alrighty. Alright, one thing that I want to add for the news, which we'll record now.
Okay.
All right, so before we go, I do want to talk about sort of some of the things that are going to be coming up. We will be having an upcoming episode, hopefully within next week. Tyler can correct me if I'm wrong.
It'll be within a week or 2 weeks. 2 weeks, yeah. 2 weeks at the most. And I think that's the schedule. I think it's the schedule moving forward for the next little while. We're hoping for every week, but we'll guarantee every 2 weeks.
Exactly. And Tyler, what's that episode going to be all about?
We're going to be talking about all things crowdfunding. We're going to be bringing on different creators who've used crowdfunding in a variety of ways. We're going to talk about, you know, how it served them, the economics of how they approach it, and their justifications behind different ways they do it. And we'll see if we can get some inside tips on running your own crowdfunding campaign of one kind or another.
Very cool. It's going to be a very, very cool episode. I'm really looking forward to it. And I think after that, our next episode is going to be, we're going to take a bit of a turn. We're going to be talking about something a little bit different, but just as exciting, just because the world in which we live in today. And we are going to be talking about all things conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that one, and we have some pretty awesome guests lined up for that one from the Conspiracy Guys podcast. Really great guys. Cannot wait to have them on the show and talk about all things conspiracies. It's going to be like an episode of Coast to Coast, basically. I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah,
and then I guess we'll be talking about Wonder Woman in the next episode, because that'll be a fun one. You're
going
to watch that
movie, right?
We're
going opening night. We're going again, 7 p.m. on Thursday.
Excellent. It's funny, because ever since we recorded, I have seen a increase of marketing, and now it's actually somewhat respectable. Reviews are coming in. Gal Gadot's getting pretty good reviews as for portraying Wonder Woman. The movie is getting overall pretty good reviews, and I do not want to get into some of those conversations that are happening about the all-female screenings and all that fun stuff, because we'll probably be talking about that at the next episode during the news section. So
yeah. We have some pretty weigh in very briefly.
Yes.
That I was in New York recently for the long weekend. Victoria Day, the Canadian one, not the American one. And there was marketing everywhere there.
Yep.
So
yep.
There definitely went from the, like, maybe we should market this.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel kind of like they took the approach of, instead of getting people bored of all the marketing so that they're not going to watch the movie, we're going to throw everything at them within the last couple weeks.
Here's hoping.
So we'll see. But I'm really looking forward to watching that. And then, yeah, we have some pretty cool stuff coming up. So, Tyler, again, thanks for stopping by, making your thoughts known, adding your 2 centavos, as I like to say, your 2 pesos.
Centavos. I like that.
So there you have it. Those are some of Tyler's initial thoughts on Guardians of the Galaxy 2. He talked a little more about sort of... he got a little deep. We got a little deep. I will say that. So, Kyle, after listening to that, you know, do you sort of... You know, one of the things, and I've said this a lot during the... during the interview, or not interview, during talking to Tyler, and it was... Am I overthinking this too much, or is this really what Sean Gunn is showing us? And it's this sort of cycle of abuse in Guardians of the Galaxy 2. You know, just really off the top of my head, you know, you have Ego, who put the spoiler alert tumor into Peter's mother. You have Star-Lord, who at one point says, well, of course I have issues, that's my freaking father. And just the mental abuse that Ego puts onto Peter, like, just tricking him. We have everything with Rocket and Yondu, where there's a great quote, "You push away anyone who's willing to put up with you because just a little bit of love reminds you how big and empty that hole inside you actually is." We have Gamora and Nebula, who literally have to fight each other just to appease their father. "All you wanted was to win. All I wanted was a sister," was one quote. We have everyone just... you know, literally, not literally, that would be really weird, everyone shitting on Mantis, and at one point she says, "Well, then I am certainly grateful to be ugly." You know, you have Drax, who's basically the super bully in this movie. You have Yondu, who's pretty much an asshole who, you know, quote-unquote, redeems himself. So what are your thoughts after listening to that?
It's changed my thinking a little bit. It really has. I didn't really think about, like, obviously I thought it was more just I didn't think that deep into it. I just thought things like, oh, Rocket kind of being a dick to everybody, I thought that was just kind of a setup so, you know, later on in the movie he could just, you know, find out that he shouldn't be that way. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I thought it was done from more of a heartfelt place as opposed to, you know, obviously, like, I haven't really, like, Tyler hasn't said it to me, so maybe I'm getting it wrong. But it sounds like definitely, like, a darker place he's saying it's coming from. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think it's more of, like, those characters are already in kind of dark places and they're getting out of them.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So it's more so just to kind of make the audience feel for those characters, because Tyler's right. Those are very, like, those themes are there.
They're the there. But again, the I don't think that...
characters doing those things, but I thought it was less of a exploring dark themes for the sake of exploring dark themes, and more like, these characters are messed up, they're prison, like, they're criminals, or they were, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, they've had dark pasts, they're not good people. I thought that was just more of the dynamic of the group, and then we're watching them learn that maybe they shouldn't always be hard on themselves or hard on each other or hard, you know, like, they should get out of that mindset. But it's fascinating that a movie with this age range is delving into darker stuff like that. Just, like, it's just, I think it was more just to show that the characters are kind of messed up characters. Like, they're,
yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking. I think it's
good characters. Like, they're not good people, in a, like, quote unquote good, you know? Yeah,
that's exactly it. I think, you know, I think we're, I want to say we're overthinking things a little too much.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of articles on the internet about this now. But frankly, I think overall, they just, like, you nailed the nail on the head when you said that they just wanted to explore the background of these characters. These characters are not good people. They're not, you know, some of them were villains. Some of them, dad, were Thanos. You know, they were all in jail at some point. They all had rough upbringings, etc. So I think they were just trying to really get deeper into the characters. And really, it wasn't going to come from a positive place. It's going to come from a negative place. And I think that the one thing that I spoke with Tyler about that I really want to focus on right now is, I think that the overall moral of the story is, you know, you make your family. You know, you choose who your family is going to be. You choose how happy you want to be. You know, with Yondu, you do, I don't want to say, you know, just by doing one good deed, everything is forgiven, but it just goes to show you that, you know, everyone has a little bit of good inside of them. Everyone has the reasons for doing things, etc.
It's the superhero version of the Fast and the Furious series. Mm-hmm. It's all about family.
Yep. So there's this cool little article that I was looking at, and I just want to touch on this. And it's 5 elements of a good sequel. So they say that a good sequel gives you something new wrapped in something familiar. A good sequel propels the original characters forward. A good sequel expands on the original's world building and narrative. A good sequel doesn't make up new rules that break the old ones. A good sequel sets up a new conflict with a new kind of villain. So let's take a deeper look into these 5 points and we'll chat about these. So a good sequel is new, but it doesn't ditch the familiar. So You know, I'd say that
this sequel does that almost to a fault a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little too much like the first one in a way, but again, like, I'm not complaining.
Yep.
I loved any time music kicked in or, you know, like, yeah, I'd say that this sequel definitely hit that point perfectly.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, it felt like it came from the same, like, it felt like a proper continuation. It didn't feel too new. And at the same time, it wasn't a complete rehash of the first movie. I find that tends to happen, especially with comedies. You know, you have your Ace Venturas of the world, your Deuce Bigelows of the world. And I know these are not good movies, but, you know, there's a prime example of where the sequel is basically just the retelling of every joke from the original or every whatever. And I find that this happens more in comedies.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
And superhero movies, you know, you create these characters and you're just basically using the same characters, having a new villain, you know, polishing it up a little, making it different, adding a little more special effects because chances are you have a higher budget, and boom, that's number two.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it did a good job of keeping it fresh.
Yep. So it really kept the look and tone of the original. We had that, you know, semi-crude humor. We had heartfelt moments, obviously. We had really cool action. And it really, overall, what really made it different was it gave us this new villain. It gave us a little bit more, but it kept enough of the familiar. All right, so point number two, a good sequel deepens the characters, propels them forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we obviously find out who Peter Quill's father is. We find out more about every character. So whatever dark past they may have had, we find out more about them. We kind of feel closer to them in a sense. And yet, like, you know, it propels them forward. So, you know, Yondu's, you know, his redeeming part and whatnot. So it's... they for sure hit that mark.
Absolutely. If there's one big takeaway from the movie, it's the first thing we talked about when we brought up the movie. It's the fact it was character development.
Mm-hmm.
Just characters had tons of moments to just kind of progress and have one-on-one conversations with each other. That's the biggest takeaway of this movie, I think.
Yep. We learn about Star-Lord's parents and backstory. We discover that the assumptions that we made about Peter, relationships with the Guardians are deepened and expanded. Yeah, so it really hits the mark everywhere here. The third point, a good sequel organically enriches the world building of the original.
I guess I'd say so.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know how... I'm just trying to think in terms of world building, how much world building it did. I guess it introduced different races. Right?
We got new characters. We expanded on a lot of the original characters. We expanded on like you said, the races. We saw more planets. We literally expanded the universe a little bit more in this film.
I don't think it's the big focus of the movie, but no. It was definitely there.
Yeah. So, you know, we have the same crew, new scenario. The universe they inhabit becomes infinitely more complex. So we even saw this in the light speed scene with Yondu and Rocket, where we even saw the Watchers. We have a demigod celestial. They introduced the whole concept of celestials. It expanded everything within its own universe of Guardians of the Galaxy. But I think more importantly, it expanded the cosmic celestial elements of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
For sure. And you know what? I didn't think about this until we're talking about this now. It did do that. Like, I didn't even put two and two together, but it did so in a way that didn't feel heavy-handed and kind of forceful in terms of, like, you know, you can tell sometimes when the superhero movies kind of are building up to a certain thing and it's very heavy-handed and they're throwing it in there just because it's like, oh, this is the next thing, so we've got to kind of set it up somehow. Anything that was thrown in here in terms of expanding the entire Marvel Universe as a whole was incredibly natural and subtle.
Mm-hmm.
Quick. Like, nothing was too heavy-handed in terms of, like, well, you know, looks like we're going to be seeing this in a movie that's going to span two parts.
Yeah, exactly. Like
which is commendable, which is great.
Yeah, the one thing I really liked about this movie is, and this is what I liked about Ant-Man, it's that they really let it be its own movie. It wasn't forced, you know, to fit within the world. Like, forcefully, it wasn't made to fit within the world that's created by Kevin Feige. You know, they were able to... It felt more of a standalone movie, where you knew that it's all connected, because that's what they love reminding us, it's all connected, but it kind of felt... It was its own movie. It stood on its own two feet. It didn't, you know, rely on Iron Man and Captain America.
For sure. Absolutely.
And that's
why... You can say that about the first one, too.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. And that's why I really enjoy these two. So, you know, it did expand the overall universe. And this one's a little bit harder to really pinpoint. Really thinking about this a little more, I really do agree with this. A good sequel doesn't change the rules of the original without good reason.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good rule that most sequels tend to break, I think.
Yep.
But to be fair, I don't know if there was any solid quote unquote rules that the first Guardian set up in any way. If from what I can remember, I haven't watched it since the theater years ago, but I don't know. I guess I just don't really know the definition of rules in a movie.
Right. So I think one of the examples that this article was bringing up was in the novel version of The Lost World sequel to Jurassic Park, we're shocked to discover that Ian Malcolm is alive. In a twist straight out of The Princess Bride, we discover that Malcolm was not only mostly dead at the end of the first novel, paving the way for Malcolm to take center stage in the sequel and its film adaptation. Malcolm is, of course, alive and well at the end of the first film. So, you know, or they make someone more powerful. So, you know, no one became more noble, no one became more powerful. Everyone and everything around the universe, around the characters kind of stayed. It maintained its status quo, so to speak.
Right. Gotcha.
Yeah. The fifth and final point here is a good sequel sets up a new kind of conflict and a new type of villain. And I think this is super straightforward.
Yeah, and it absolutely does it, I think. Absolutely does it well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to where they go with this. It'll be very interesting to sort of see how all of this does tie in with the larger Marvel universe. As soon as I said it, you know, I hate it, but you know, it is all connected for them. So let's see how it all makes sense.
To close everything out, I this isn't my analogy, but a friend of mine said this as we were having a conversation about the movie, and I really like it, and I've been thinking about it ever since. When we were talking about the movie, he said, you know, let's mixtapes are important to the series. Let's treat these two movies as mixtapes. The first one is one that a band has been working on for years and years, and it comes out and it hits hard and it introduces everyone, and it's not flash in the pan. It's just like, it's huge. It's big. And the second one's a little quieter, a little more introspective in a way. And, I think that nails these movies perfectly.
Yeah, that's a perfect way to put it. You know, sequels are always very hard because you never know exactly what you're going to get.
And, you know, I'm happy to say that luckily Guardians of the Galaxy didn't hit a sophomore slump in any way.
Exactly. I would say that, in fact, while not better than the first, it certainly doesn't – it wasn't worse. It didn't change anything.
No. Well, it – I don't know. It didn't change anything, but there was enough – there that changed, I think, that it's like, if they truly didn't change anything, there'd be no point in seeing it. It'd be like, oh, well, who cares? It's just a rehash. I think there's enough change that it's its own movie that's worth seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I agree 100% there.
I'm sorry, I'm coughing, and I don't want to cough into the mic.
Yeah, it's all good. So yeah, no, it's that was very good. So do you have any closing thoughts on Guardians of the Galaxy 2?
Check it out. Especially if you like the first one. I mean, I'm sure everyone already has already. It's been out for a bit. But yeah, I thought it was great, and it's definitely one of the best movies I've seen this year. And that being said, I've seen a lot of good movies this year, so it ranks high up there. I'm really happy with how it turned out, and I thought it was great.
Yeah, all good, very good. So that is really, you know, too bad we weren't able to get the interview that I wanted. You know, family commitments and whatnot really took over. So we will be bringing that interview to you. Not going to say who it was with, but it was certainly Guardians of the Galaxy related. So too bad that didn't work out. But it is what it is. I think this is a really good time to remind our listeners how they can get a hold of us. Kyle, do you want to take this one?
Nope.
All right. So you can find us.
I need to hear you do it a couple times before I take the reins.
It's all good. So you can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Instagram. All It's Canon Podcast. Very easy. If you are already following Comics I Read, you are now following the It's Canon Podcast. And it's just at It's Canon Podcast. Super simple. You can find us on iTunes, or you should subscribe to our podcast, and you'll be able to find it on iTunes, Google Play Music, you can on Stitcher, any podcast network that you can subscribe to probably has us. So just subscribe, leave comments, let us know what you think. If you want to talk to us right now, we have a temporary email address, and it's canonpodcast@gmail.com. So pretty simple, pretty easy. And there you go. That was a pretty good episode. Kyle, welcome back. As always, it's super fun to have you back.
It's glad to be back. And with that, I'll just stop talking.
All right.
This is my first episode back in a while and my last. I'm giving up on talking into a microphone.
It's all good. Like I said, it'll take us a little while to get back to the swing of things. So thank you so much for listening, and I hope that you enjoyed listening as much as we enjoyed making it for you. Next episode, we're going to be talking all things crowdfunding. We have some guests that we will bring on, and it's going to be a great talk. So thanks, everyone, and good night.